supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Our producer Mike and Scott came across a blog called punkrockmommy.org. It's written by Andrea Collins Smith, a mother of six. She started it after she was diagnosed with inflammatory breast cancer. Mikan said that I really had to read this blog. She was right. Once I started, I couldn't stop. Here's a brief excerpt. It starts with a quote by James Dean. Dream as if you'll live forever. Live as if you'll die today. And then Andrea Collins Smith goes on to say, that quote perfectly sums up what I'm trying to achieve given my diagnosis. I want to be able to make plans for the future. I want to dream of living out my life with Kelly and the kids, going on vacations, watching them graduate high school and college. I want to believe those things are still possible. At the same time, I realize that it's crucial that I make the very best of every day I have. I often do far too much on my good days as a result. Terminal illness can nearly eradicate procrastination. I mean, I know I'm going to live today, but I really don't want to put anything off. I do at times feel a sense of urgency in my interpersonal relationships. I want to let everyone know I love them. Andrea Collins Smith, welcome to the show.
Hi, Dan.
Thanks so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
You're living with a terminal illness.
Yeah, that's what they say, stage four.
What's that mean, having a terminal illness?
At this point, I have cancer that has spread to my bones, and as far as I know, that means that there's no cure for cancer today, so they can keep me on chemotherapy and use what they have available. But typically, women with inflammatory breast cancer have a 40% survival rate, and with stage four, it's probably at 5 years, but it could be less than that. It's hard to say.
When I asked you what it means, this business of terminal illness, you began your answer by saying, they say.
Yeah.
So now we know what it means to them.
What does it mean to me? It means that all I have is today. Because, I mean, I, like I've said this in the blog, the difference between me and everybody else is, or other people, is that I'm pretty sure I know what's going to kill me. And I can't live with terminal illness indefinitely. I can't live with stage four cancer indefinitely. And, I mean, I think for me it means that I have to make the most of today because this is what I have. So
we're going to talk a bit later about how to do that. That's pretty hard to do. This all started in May, right after you graduated Temple.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of symptoms had you been having?
Yeah, I actually had a baby in November of 2006, and in January of 2007, I started to have symptoms that looked like a breast infection. They call it mastitis. Nursing women sometimes get symptoms that usually clear up with antibiotics, things like swelling of the breast tissue, and it's sore, and it's red, and it's itchy, and, breast just looks... they use the word angry. But I had symptoms for 5 months that seemed to me to get better if I did certain things, and I ignored them. And then I went on antibiotics, and I did 2 courses of antibiotics, and they didn't clear up. And finally, the day after I graduated Temple, I went and had an ultrasound of the breast, and the doctor who was doing the ultrasound actually knew about IBC, inflammatory breast cancer, and he immediately took action and got me a biopsy that day and had me see a surgeon that day. And I was diagnosed 2 days later. So on May 11th, I got the official diagnosis.
Inflammatory breast cancer is pretty rare. It doesn't begin with a lump.
No, there's no lump. In fact, it doesn't even show up on a mammogram. My breast cancer did not show up on the mammogram that I got that day. It's not even always diagnosable with an ultrasound. It's typically done, the only way to know is with a biopsy. And I know there's two different kinds of biopsies, and you need the good one. I don't know what the difference is, but
we're going to find out because we have a Dr. Cheryl Graham on the phone. She's a professor of surgery at Winship Cancer Center in Atlanta, Georgia. Dr. Graham, welcome to the show. Dr. Graham?
Yes, I'm here.
Hi. Heard a little bit of Andrea Collins Smith's story?
I absolutely have. Andrea, you're a very brave woman, and thank you for sharing your story today. It's very important to get this word out to women.
Yeah.
Tell us about inflammatory breast cancer. How does it present itself?
Well, it's one of the more rare types of cancer. It only presents in about 1% to 5% of all women with breast cancer, but it presents with a rapid onset of this redness, warmth, swelling, involving more than a third of the breast, and have some edema-like, we often call it pot orange, meaning kind of the skin can look like an orange peel, and then you can see some nipple kind of retraction. And Andrea is absolutely right that it really presents as an isolated mass. It's more this rapid onset of this breast warmth that appears like an infection. And the reason the breast becomes that way is because cancer cells are growing into the lymphatics, the dermal, the skin lymphatics are kind of being invaded by cancer cells and gives this appearance of the breast. And so diagnosis is often confused early on because it looks like a breast infection. And so women are often treated with antibiotics first, where if it doesn't clear right away with antibiotics, that's the message to women today. If you have a red breast, most of the time it is an infection, but if it doesn't clear within a week or so with antibiotics, then you have to get yourself checked out by a breast specialist.
And as soon as you talk about involving the lymph system, you're probably talking about something's beginning to spread throughout the body pretty rapidly.
That is why it's known as a fairly aggressive cancer, because even at the time of presentation, even for women who are diagnosed very quickly and don't have symptoms for a while, about 20 to 30% will have spread someplace else, like Andrea was sharing with you, spread to either the bones or other structures in the body.
Who's at most risk? Do we know?
Well, it's fascinating because over the past 25 years, we have seen a doubling of the disease. Even though it's so rare, it is happening more frequently. And it turns out that African-Americans are at slightly higher risk than Caucasian women, as well as definitely younger women. This is a breast cancer that presents, on average, 4 to 5 years younger than non-inflammatory breast cancer. So younger women, African-American women, not sure where it's coming from or why it happens. There's been one study that shows a relationship between body mass index in some women, body mass index being a little higher in some women who are at risk for this disease, but I have seen this disease in all women of shapes and sizes. So don't really know the keys to what is causing
and,
the disease.
And we heard about pregnancy in Andrea's case, and there's obviously a great deal of hormonal changes. Do we know anything about that? I wonder because my late wife developed a malignant melanoma shortly after she gave birth.
Right. We know breast cancer can occur in pregnancy. Inflammatory breast cancer is not the most common kind of breast cancer that occurs during pregnancy or shortly thereafter. Again, I really want to emphasize to the audience that it is a rare cancer, but it's not the most common cancer during pregnancy.
How is it treated?
The key is number one, to make the diagnosis. Andrea talked a little about the biopsy, and even though you can't see it on mammogram, often on MRI or ultrasound, you can identify a more dense area of the breast and take deep core biopsies as well as a skin punch biopsy. The skin, I think, punch biopsy is what Andrea was referring to, too, because that's where you can see the tumor cells invading the skin. The treatment then is multimodality treatment, which means we start out with chemotherapy first, and then treat with surgery, and then treat with radiation. And the reason is because, yes, in 20 to 30% of women, it can be spread someplace else, but even if it doesn't appear to be spread someplace else, because the skin is so involved, we have to treat with drugs, medications to clear the skin, so to speak, clear the, you know, suppress, kill some of the cancer so we can operate and get a free margin on that, and then provide radiation on top to decrease the chance of it coming back in the breast.
Finally, what's the outlook for women with inflammatory breast cancer?
Historically, wasn't so good, but nowadays we have much better drugs for breast cancer, much better drugs for inflammatory breast cancer. Inflammatory breast cancer, they're all different types, and so depending on whether it's hormonally sensitive or it's HER2 positive, again, those are characteristics of the tumor. Medical oncologists now select treatments that are targeted specifically for that type of tumor. There's also some very exciting work on the angiogenic kind of characteristics of inflammatory cancer, meaning these tumors produce a lot of blood vessels, which probably makes them a little more aggressive. And now there are drugs that can actually stop the formation of these blood vessels, anti-angiogenic drugs. And there are studies now, you can go on the National Cancer Institute website and find some of these studies where women are being treated with these drugs before, again, the surgery, because we want to target the specific type of cancer so we can get control of that and treat it with the other modalities.
So the question that I think Andrea and I are going to explore here is, given that it's stage four, given that it's invaded her body, bones, and given the fact that there's research out there that you're talking about some hope, I mean, that we're right on the edge here, it sounds, of kind of hope and hopelessness here. We're kind of dancing right in between those two.
Well, when you think about our cancer treatments in general, there is a changing paradigm, and it's more how can we have patients live longer with their disease, no matter where it is, if it happens to be in the bones, by giving certain drugs and medications that can suppress the growth, almost like the paradigm shift we went through with HIV.
Yeah.
And so that is definitely happening. Women with stage 4 disease nowadays are surviving much longer than in the past, again, because we have better tools in our toolbox and better ways to treat this. And so the key to this whole diagnosis, though, I just want to emphasize with inflammatory breast cancer, is to raise the awareness to make a diagnosis as early as possible so we can intercede with those important drugs. Again, just as you're doing in the show today.
Andrea, when I asked you before the show why you wanted to come on, this was one of the reasons, is to get the word out. Is there anything you want to say to Dr. Graham? Ask Dr. Graham before we say goodbye to her.
Oh, I just thank her for coming on. I think she said everything that I'm not the doctor, so it was perfect. You know, and I think, yes, it's rare, but I definitely want women, if they have any of these symptoms, go ahead and be, you know, a little nervous. Go in, get checked out right away. I don't want any woman to wait 5 months. You know, a nursing mom should not wait 5 months with these symptoms and say, well, it can't be breast cancer, because yes, it can.
Dr. Gabram, thanks so much for taking the time.
Hey, Andrea, good luck to you, too.
Thanks so much.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Dr. Gabram's first thing she said was to call you brave. What's your reaction to that?
I'm going to be modest. No, I don't know. I don't know what people have said that. Are you strong? You're brave? I'm not sure. What's the option when you're told that you have a terminal cancer? I mean, I'm just asking. So is your option to start crying, be depressed, and go hide under something? I have six children who need to be played with and talked to and loved and everything. I don't have that option. So I still have to make cookies. I still have to make dinner. I still have to pretend to be interested in Scrabble games. You know, I don't have a choice. So I don't know if that's bravery or if that's just survival.
All right. So at the risk of annoying you, the tone in your voice says that when you're called brave or strong, the tone in your voice says that annoys you.
I don't know if it annoys me. I'm curious why that's. I don't think I understand exactly why that's what I'm being called. You know,
I'll tell you why it annoys.
Okay.
It annoys me.
It annoys you when people say it to you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it feels distancing, and I don't want to be distanced.
I just want to be like everybody else.
Yeah. People are saying, you're different. Look how strong you are. Well, I mean, you and I know that's a lot of crap.
Yeah.
You know, but, you know, they're trying to do something with us that makes us different.
Yeah, I really object to anything that puts me on a pedestal anyway. Because, I mean, you have five kids. That's so, it's so hard. How do you do it? I was like, what choice do I have? I had them. You know, what does that even mean? And now that I have cancer, people are like, you're so brave. You're so strong. I'm like, as opposed to what? Aren't you strong when you deal with things that you have to deal with? And we're all going through something. This just happens to be what I'm going through.
What are you going through?
I don't know.
Don't talk doctor talk to me.
Don't talk doctor talk. What am I going through? You know, it's emotionally, it's hard. I think there's a couple minutes in the morning, those hazy minutes, where I forget that I have cancer. I wake up, the baby wakes up, I'm doing that, and then somewhere in that hazy morning fog, I go, oh my gosh, I have cancer. And that's hard, because it's like I get reminded every single day. You know, you can forget about it sometimes when you're in the middle of doing things or having some fun with the kids or your friends, and then you're reminded, oh, you know what, this might be temporary for you, or, you know, the thought creeps in, and I don't want to say that I try and push it out. I just try and be like, okay, so that's my new reality. That's what I've got going on, and just try and accept it.
This could be temporary for you.
What's that mean?
What's that like?
I don't want to be a pessimist, because I want to believe, like I said, and I've said this on the blog, you know, I want to believe that they're going to find a cure for cancer, or that some drug out there is going to prolong my life for a very long time. And I really hope that that's the case. But temporary today, it just means today, you know, because I don't know how fast my illness is going to spread or how well it's going to respond to chemo. So I have to accept that this is what I have. I have today. So for me, everything really is just as temporary as this day. And I don't know if that's pessimistic or not, but that's how I have to cope with it.
I think it is. I'll tell you a weird thing that happened inside my little mind about a month ago. I was on a 3-day meditation retreat. So the exercise for our meditation exercise was about letting go. So we're doing this letting go thing, and I'm trying to work on letting go, and what pops into my head but Dionne Warwick singing "But I Keep Holding On." So here's I'm thinking, what are you doing in there? You know, I'm doing letting go and she's doing holding on. But then I thought of, stick with me here, but then I thought of the beginning of that lyric. I know I'll never love this way again. That's why we hold on. Because we know we will never love this way again. What you and I have right now, we're not going to have again. Even if we do live until tomorrow, you know? And that's what makes it precious, and that's what makes it painful. So I've learned volumes from Dionne Warwick. And that's the way my mind works. We're talking with Andrea Collins-Smith about small mundane things like life, death, living with cancer, trying to live every day in the moment, and having that interrupted by needing to pay bills and make cookies for the kids, which might be part of living in the moment. Our phone number, if you'd like to join the conversation, is 888-477-9499. If you want to tell us your experience of life and death, or perhaps even your experience of listening to Andrea and our conversation. I'm Dan Gottlieb. You're listening to Voices in the Family. It's right here on WHYY 91 FM.
Are you concerned about a loved one who is using drugs or drinking too much? You may be eligible to participate in research conducted by the Treatment Research Institute. As part of the study, you'll be asked to attend up to 14 sessions with a family trainer and will be compensated for completing questionnaires on a weekly and monthly basis. For details, 877-I-WORRY-2, 877-496-7792. The Family Training Program supports WHYY.
On the next Fresh Air, a period of change in Iran, but not for the better. We talk with BBC correspondent Frances Harrison, based in Tehran for the past 3 years. She'll tell us about choosing her clothes and her words more carefully to avoid harassment by the conservative Iranian regime. Join us for the next Fresh Air.
This afternoon at 3 and again tonight at 7 here on WHYY 91 FM.
Welcome back to Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. My guest is Andrea Collins-Smith. She started a blog called punkrockmommy.org, which I highly recommend you take a look at. She started it when she was in May, yes?
Mm-hmm.
37 years old. She was diagnosed with stage 4 inflammatory breast cancer. And we will talk in a minute about why punkrockmommy.org. I want to hear about your life before that day in May. And why are you shaking your head no?
I don't know what to say. So how much do you want to know?
Well, let's start with the name of the blog and the tattoos and the old husband, the new husband.
Oh my goodness.
Kids.
Yeah. So I moved
to... We have to take another break in about 2 minutes. Or, no, I'm kidding.
Okay, good. That's good. Another break. No, I just... I always wanted to get tattooed because I used to go to carnivals in Florida when I was growing up, and I just wanted to look like the carnies who are just covered in tattoos. I couldn't wait. So I was 18. I ran into Philly Eddie's and got my first tattoo, and I've been getting tattooed since then. And I married a tattoo artist. My second husband is a tattoo artist, so I get the free tattoos, which is awesome.
If you want to see Andrea, by the way, and her fabulous tattoos, we are on the WHYY cable channel as we speak. So you've got 6 kids.
Yeah. I didn't have a television for a long time.
Yes.
That's my excuse. So, yeah, I have 6 amazing kids. I have 5 sons and 1 daughter, and they range in age from my son, my little baby is 10 months, to my oldest is 17. He's a senior at Bodine High School, and I really hated being alone. I did, and I decided that to totally avoid that, I was just going to have a lot of kids to keep me company. And I loved it. I still love it. I think having kids is awesome, and they are my favorite people, hands down.
I want to come back and talk more about your kids, but you touched on something very important. You said you hated to be alone.
Mm-hmm.
Is the experience of having terminal illness, do you feel alone with this?
I definitely feel alienated. I think that even... when someone's trying to relate, and sometimes they can, as much empathy as I've gotten from people that's actually, and there are people who can relate to me, there is this completely alienating, alone feeling. And there's sometimes when I'm with my husband where I'm like, you don't understand, because you're going to get to live and I'm not, and you're going to get to stay with our children and raise them, and I'm not, you know?
What doesn't he understand?
That he's the lucky one. that's how I feel. You know, everybody else is lucky or fortunate, and you know, it's just, you know, it's not a why me thing. It's definitely more a, like, man, why, you know, like, God, that's not what I wanted to happen. I thought that I was going to live and be old and enjoy my grandchildren and, you know, and life goes on without me. So now I get to quote David Lee Roth, because you got to quote Dionne Warwick. So.
You angry?
Am I angry? Not usually. Not usually.
Sometimes.
Sometimes. Usually my husband will say I'm mostly angry at him, but I love him, so.
You can be both.
I'm a little unstable. I'm on steroids, Lupron. Not my usual relaxed self.
Well, you
but
know.
It's a lot to take in, you know? It's a lot to process.
Stage 4 cancer really doesn't help one's sense of equanimity right away.
No.
Speaking of that, you use acupuncture, yoga, meditation mm-hmm. to improve the quality of your life.
Absolutely.
Is it effective?
Oh, so effective. I am amazed. I've been going to the Wan Institute, which is an acupuncture school in Glenside. And my friend Heidi said, let's try acupuncture. And I went with it. And this friend of hers, Doreen, has been giving me amazing acupuncture, and the clinic director, Ed. And I sit with Ed sometimes for half an hour beforehand, and I realized the other day that I think he's my therapist, because he started saying things like, how's Kelly feeling? How are you feeling? And how do you think the kids are doing? And I was like, oh my goodness, he's my therapist, my acupuncturist. But it's cured. I don't want to say it's cured. It's effective on all my chemo symptoms, every one that I've had. So I feel physically good for most of the time in between chemo appointments. I have about 5 days where I'm really tired.
And tell us about your treatment regimen.
In terms of my chemo, I go every 3 weeks, and I get three tremendous bags. I think they're tremendous bags of chemo, and it takes about, I'm never there less than 5 hours, and I get a bag of steroids and a shot of Lupron, I guess. And well, that I guess they do every 3 months, so it. And I go every 3 weeks, and then each one of the medications has its own specific side effects, ranging from hair loss to damage to the fingernails, digestive issues, what I affectionately call chemo brain, you know, a major disorientation, cognitive functions, you know, affects cognitive functions like it is right now. And extreme fatigue and eye twitching. It's kind of a huge.
How long does that last?
Everything can happen all month long. It you know, in between treatments. I've been getting acupuncture to handle almost all of it, and it's been successful. Except for the fatigue that I feel the first few days afterward. I really don't have too much else to complain about.
And you're okay today?
I'm great today. Right. I could do some yoga right now in the studio.
Well, tell me about that, then, the yoga and the meditation.
I try and meditate every morning. I've been waking up at 5, kind of on my own, and taking that time where it's not brutally hot out to sit in the living room and do about 25, 30 minutes of just total meditation, trying to let my brain not think about anything, shutting everything off, you know, just being really quiet and really still. And I think that's really helped me stay really focused on the day. I think it's helped me maintain a lot of joy and just remember that, you know, this is part of God's plan and that everything is going to work out. And I believe that with my whole heart. And whether that means I'm here or not here, it's going to work out. Whether, you know, they find a cure for cancer in the next 5 years or not.
Well, you believe that depending on the moment when the anxiety is not there,
but yeah.
You know,
yeah.
You are human.
Yeah. It comes and goes.
Yeah. Tell us more about your spiritual beliefs. Tell us about God and your relationship with Him, her, or it.
Yeah.
And
for me, yeah.
Prayers.
God the Father. I like to think of God as a father. Not my father, but maybe a good father. I'm a Christian, and I go to a Brethren in Christ Church. I'm pretty sure that's what Circle of Hope is. I go to Circle of Hope. That's an offshoot of Mennonite. And, you know, believe in nonviolence and and, you know, communing with the Spirit of God. We have a good time.
You pray?
A lot.
Is it too personal to ask what you pray for?
Sometimes I pray for God's will, I'll be honest, because there's a lot of you know, belief in my heart that God's plan is perfect, and I am only able to see a tiny little portion of it and not the big picture. And whether or not God chooses to use me to exemplify a miracle and cures my cancer, or God chooses to, the plan might be that all these lovely people I have in my life, many of whom who don't have children, are now very involved in the lives of my children. And all of a sudden, these people I know who, you know, maybe were close to my kids have gotten very close to my kids. Who's to say that that's not part of the plan? And I don't know what their lives hold or what the plan is for them. So I have to believe that it's all perfect. And so sometimes I just pray for God's will. And sometimes I pray for a cure for cancer. And sometimes I pray that God will spare me and have mercy and cure my cancer. And so it depends. And a lot of times I just pray for world peace and for us to pull out of Iraq, you know? So, I mean, I'm not incredibly self-centered, you know? I pray for friends of mine who have IBC, and I pray for their children. And
world peace.
Mm.
Do you have peace inside yourself?
Depending on the day. I try.
Do you have more or less peace inside
than I did
yourself?
Before? Mm-hmm. I think more because I am more aware now of the fact that God is carrying me and getting me through this than I ever have. I know for a fact there are a lot of people who find out they're terminally ill and they need to, I mean, and they really need to, they're depressed, they need to go on antidepressants, and they're having a really hard time. And from the day of my diagnosis, I've really kind of swam in this water of acceptance that I did not think I would have. I thought I'd be much more, I don't know what the word is. I thought I would cry more, and I just don't cry very much, and I'm not pushing anything down. I really feel pretty at ease with the whole thing in terms of, like, I just do today, and I just put the next step forward, and I'm going to do chemo, and after chemo, I'm going to do my surgery, and after my surgery, I'm going to do radiation, and one step at a time, one day at a time, but there's not a lot to shake that, I think.
When we spoke on the telephone,
mm-hmm.
and when we spoke just now before the show,
mm-hmm.
there's something you talked about both times.
Mm.
And that's this business of advice that people give you and books that have been written about what causes cancer, from diet to power lines, mm-hmm. to whatever's going to sell the book. What's your reaction? What's the anger?
I guess the anger is that they've actually, for almost every type of cancer, proven that there's a genetic component. And if you have a gene that signals a malfunction in the body that creates an increase in, you know, cellular growth, which is, you know, cancer growth or whatever, how is that affected by whether or not you ate fruits and vegetables, or whether or not you're eating enough flaxseed, or, you know, I'm not saying that there's no environmental component. I understand that with many, I mean, if you smoke, you're more likely to get lung cancer, but there are people who get lung cancer and never smoked a day in their life. And in my case, my inflammatory breast cancer was not caused by something I did. And then I feel like that's like a way that people blame the victim. And that's like telling a woman who gets raped, she got raped because she had on a short skirt. I mean, this is ridiculous. And I mean, I know people think they're being helpful, but they're totally not being helpful when they do that, you know? And it's a little offensive, actually, I think.
Yeah, I have a feeling that people who do that because of their own fear.
Which is what I've said, too.
Which is what we do.
They want to feel safe. If you eat macrobiotically and you think that's going to keep you from getting cancer, good for you. I hope that that's the case. But the reality is that, you know, there are macrobiotics who get cancer, too. You know?
How do your Western doctors feel about your acupuncture?
So far, so good, actually. The oncologist that I've been seeing, her dad was, I guess, practiced acupuncture, so she's been very supportive of it. And I thought that people would think that it was completely off the wall, and There's actually a lot of ladies who I met at my IBC support group meeting on Saturday. Hey, everybody. They were wonderful. They were like, I did acupuncture too. So it was good.
You also referred to the Wellness Center in your blog. Mm-hmm. Tell us about that.
That's where I went. The Wellness Center is for caregivers and people who have cancer. And they have this beautiful space in Fairmount Park.
And how do we find them? They're good.
The Wellness
program.
Center. TWCP. I don't know if it's .org or .com, but it's online. And I found out about them, and they have just so much available for people who are either experiencing cancer, recovered from cancer, or their caregivers, and they've been really wonderful. So,
we have to take a break. I want to come back and talk about your kids again and what you've told them and what you haven't told them. We also have the Assistant Director of Social Work at Fox Chase Cancer Center who's going to join us. You're listening to Voices in the Family. I'm with Andrea Collins-Smith, a 37-year-old woman who was diagnosed with stage 4 breast cancer in May. She started a blog called punkrockmommy.org, which I highly recommend you read. Well, we'll be back in just 60 seconds. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. You're listening to Voices in the Family right here on WHYY. 91 FM.
The University of Pennsylvania proudly supports WHYY. If you or someone you know is between the ages of 13 and 18, using drugs or alcohol, and having difficulty paying attention or sitting still, Penn's Rehab After School in Paoli has a research study that may be of help. For more information, the number is 610-644-6464, extension 563. 610-644-6464, extension 563.
And we're back on Voices in the Family. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. We're talking with Andrea Collins-Smith, a mother of 6 who was diagnosed in May with inflammatory breast cancer, stage 4, and she started an amazing blog, and she's an amazing human. So while we were on the break, not a strong human, just an amazing human, very human. So while we were on the break, I commented that, you know, you're over there laughing and smiling and being playful with me, and I want to say, what's the matter with you? You've got stage 4 cancer, for God's sakes. I mean, you know, you're terminally ill, woman. What are you smiling and laughing and being playful with me? Are you really as happy as you look?
Yeah, I'm really happy. I mean, it's hard to explain, but I have a beautiful family and amazing friends that totally love me, and I'm enjoying being here with you, and I'm hoping that so someone listens and maybe they have a symptom, and you know, or maybe they're getting something out of it, you know, either in finding out about IBC or how to better support someone with terminal cancer or just how to be in the moment of today. So I think all of this is good stuff. I'm happy about it.
So let's go back and talk about the kids.
Mm-hmm.
What have you told them?
I think I've told them everything. I think my kids are very, very well aware of what's going on. And we sat them down all together when they found out that I had cancer, and we didn't know if it was stage 3 or 4 then, because inflammatory always is stage 3. It has to start with stage 3 because it involves your lymphatic system. So I sat them down and I explained to them that I'd be getting chemotherapy. And I said, you know, who knows what cells in the body are quick reproducers? So my kids raised their hand. They're like, hair, nails. And I'm like, right, so I'm going to lose my hair because chemotherapy makes your hair fall out. And then I said, and then I'm going to get a mastectomy. Who knows what a mastectomy is? And none of them knew. And I explained the procedure and the surgery. And my daughter, who's, you know, 10, raises her hand. And she says, so is your breast going to grow back? And I was like, no, it's not going to grow back. And, you know, they'll, you know, maybe in a few years I'll get a new one. And then my older son goes, so are they going to cast the other breasts so that they match? And I was like, no, I'll have one new booby and one old booby. And, you know, I mean, it was great. And then at the very end, they started to cry because my husband said, you know, you should tell them that it may not work. You know, the chemo might not work. And I said, well, you know, we don't know how long I have. And, but you have each other and you have me for today and for every day after. And there's a part of me in all of you and that won't go away. And we cried a little bit. We held each other and, you know, my 15-year-old held my daughter and we all kind of embraced each other. And since then I've told them, of course, that I'm stage four, but I mean, it's really no different. All we really have is today and we're just going to go ahead with treatment and then each day is what we have, and for however long that lasts.
Let's talk with Luann Chenoweth. She's, like I said, Assistant Director of Social Work at Fox Chase Cancer Center. Luann, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Before I ask you a question, I want to come back to Andrea. When I said we had Luann on the show, you were pretty happy mm-hmm. about that.
Yeah, absolutely.
So why don't you ask the first question?
Do you think that different age groups should be given different amounts of information when it comes to a terminal illness?
Well, I think that it sounds like you're handling things really well with your children from just the little bit that I've heard you say. And I think that different age groups of children, you know, at their different ages, they can understand things. So sometimes the younger children can do with briefer explanations. I think the basic thing that you've covered amazingly well is that the honesty has to be there. Mm-hmm. Kids know if you're being evasive. And it sounds like your family values getting together and being really open with one another. So that's an expectation that your family has. And I would recommend that in the cancer experience, it's really important that we tell kids the honest truth at a level that they can take it in. So some of your older children may have more sophisticated questions and need for a little bit more detail than the younger ones, but they all need to know what you're dealing with and the changes that are going to happen for them.
Is there such a thing as too much information for...
I think that there is such a thing as too much information for anyone, and that's not just children. We're all very different about the amounts of information that help us cope and the amounts that overwhelm. So I think that Andrea probably has some idea of the different personalities in her family and maybe not swamping somebody with too many details, but yet another child might have more curiosity or have a lot more need for information. Just as we find that with our cancer patients, sometimes people go out on a zillion different websites and shut themselves down by overwhelming with too much. So again, you strike a balance.
Andrea did something when she was reporting what she said to her kids that I think every parent in the world is going to do, being protective of our kids. She said she was honest, and she said it might not work. And then she said her next sentence was, but you'll have each other.
Mm-hmm.
And our instinct is to protect our kids and reassure them that everything will be okay. Is there ever a time to say it might not be okay?
Well, I think that she struck the perfect thing for the time frame of just informing the kids, and I guess I would want to be sure that she would say how things are going each step of the way, and then that they can trust that they can ask her questions, which I would think, based on what I hear, they probably feel comfortable with that. But it's always good to put that out there, that you can come to me, and that other people in your circle, she's mentioned a lot of good friends and family being close, that there may be sometimes teenagers are more comfortable talking to a friend or a trusted family member. So pointing out who they can talk to about different things along the way, but very much I think it's great that she puts out, I'll tell you what's happening and you'll hear it here, and give them tools. Here's what we can do together. We're living in the day. And she's very hopeful. And I think that's an authentic thing, and that's what kids need to know. She's genuinely hopeful about doing well with the treatment, so that's important for her to project. And
what about the emotions that go on? Let's start with, for example, Andrea or anybody mm-hmm. else who might impart this information. What do they do with their own, what might be terror or grief or feeling out of control? Do you share that? Do you deny it? Do you pretend it's not there? Do you act, I'll use that curse word, do you act strong when you don't feel it?
Are you asking about the adult, like Andrea,
yes,
in this
yes.
situation?
Uh-huh.
I think that kids of different ages can handle different things. It's good for a parent to say, I might have good days, bad days. I feel grumpy some days or frustrated or sad, and what that's all about. It sounded like they did cry together, and that's an honest expression of, you know, a way to let things out. We always recommend, too, letting children know you may be at different places. They might have feelings that they don't understand, and they need to share. So who can they share things with? We don't judge people's feelings, but how you behave. You have ideas and rules in your family about behavior, but certainly you accept that people have strong emotions. And I would prepare kids that they might feel some strong emotions about this. Andrea sounds like a pretty amazing person, so it would be hard to sit there as her child and think about her not being there, no matter who else you have. It's not the same as having her.
No matter what happens here, there is a quality of grief.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's about death, but certainly what we had yesterday
right.
has died.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to grieve as a family. Yes?
Yes. I think that they need to know that it's okay to bring those things up and to really give voice to that if that's what they need to do. It sounds like a very open family, that there's a place for all of that. But again, sometimes you have to set the stage by asking. Sometimes kids are quiet about things, especially if you're trying to laugh and be upbeat. They might have a feeling, and it would be important to say, it's okay if we're not all feeling upbeat on any given day, and it's certainly, there's ways to handle those feelings, and you try to model it, you try to talk about it, encourage them. You know, you're usually not quiet, and I've noticed that you're being really quiet. Is something on your mind? Does it have to do with what's going on with me? You can put that language out there.
That's great. That's great advice. Luann, I want to thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
And thank you, Andrea, for sharing your story. You really do have an amazing way of dealing with all of this.
Well, thanks. Thanks very much.
That was Luann Chenoweth. She's the Assistant Director of Social Work at Fox Chase Cancer Center. Are you more comfortable with the amazing word than you are with the strong word?
Whatever, it's fine. I am amazing. Good.
You are.
Yeah, I'm so amazing.
You've amazed me. I don't know if you're amazing, but you've amazed me.
Yeah.
Your children's Uncle John.
Yeah.
Recently died at age 42 of an aneurysm.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us what that was like for you.
I thought that was incredibly shocking, you know, because here I am, like, in my cancer bubble. And, you know, I have all these people expecting something to happen to me, and my ex-husband, the kids, my five of my children, their father, this was their uncle, you know, and they love him, you know, they love their Aunt Missy, they love their cousins, and this was a shock to the entire family.
Did you see yourself? I mean, when I go to funerals, I identify with the person in the box.
You know, I actually was too sick. I feel so bad. I was too sick. The kids went to the funeral, and I just tried really hard to be, like, loving and supportive of what they were going through. And of course, like, I identify because it's right in front of me, you know, death is right there. But, you know, the only reason I discussed it on the blog, because it's a personal thing going on within the family, it was hard for me to decide whether or not to put that out there, is because I really want people to understand an aneurysm. He was 42 years old, you know, he was enjoying his wife and his family, and then he wasn't here anymore, and that's tragic, and it's quick, and it is not what anyone expected, and sometimes life is not what we expect.
Tell me how the children are doing.
I think they're doing very well, and they do have a lot of people that they talk to, and not just me, and I think they're very strong people, and I think that they are going to get through this, and we do talk a lot about everything, including my illness.
Do me a favor. You have said in your blog you have a sense of urgency in your relationships.
Mm-hmm.
Could you say to me, to the audience, whatever you'd like to say in the time we have left?
Do we only have like a minute left? Mm-hmm. I think that everyone should be doing a lot more forgiving and a lot more accepting and a lot more of embracing of their children, and, you know, forgetting that there's all this other stuff going on that seems so important. You know, your bills and your dishes and all of that are not as important as sitting down with your loved ones and spending time with them. Everyone should be doing that. Because we keep thinking we're going to put off life until this time when it's more convenient, and then you don't have one anymore. So it's time to start living.
Let me say this about my experience over this hour. I think I'll never forget you. Not so much your words. I mean, they were great, but your being, your smile. I will carry you with me. I truly feel blessed to have made your acquaintance, and so is our audience.
And the feeling's mutual.
Thank you.
smiles a lot too.
My guest has been Andrea Collins Smith. She writes a blog, punkrockmommy.org. Our engineer for today's show's been Al Banks. Shane Ewing is our intern. Christine Dempsey is our executive producer. Elisa Walters is our associate producer. Voices in the Family is produced by Mike and Scott. I'm Dan Gottlieb, your host. Please enjoy your week, my friends.
Next time on Day to Day, meet the new boss.
Same as the old boss?
Raul Castro brought a different leadership style to Cuba when his brother Fidel ceded power a year ago.
But how different is Raul?
There's potential for some economic reforms, but so far we haven't really seen any evidence that life on the ground for actual Cubans has changed.
A year with Cuba's other Castro.
Next time on Day to Day.
This afternoon at
Day to Day is coming.